You're listening to Greater LA from KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Happy holidays to you, whether you celebrate Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, or maybe nothing at all. It is a time for family, friends, and those we hold dear. Well, earlier this holiday season, we asked you to tell us about your most unforgettable holiday memory. And KCRW producer Danielle Chiraguayo reached out to hear more from some of you, and today we present a couple of stories. Both of them are tales about a parent, a child, and something special that happened at Christmas.
This is Peter Wittenberg from Glendale. I was a student, and I was a single father to an 8-year-old little girl, Chloe. And it was Christmas, and I decided that we needed a Christmas tree, a real Christmas tree with the scent of a tree that'll fill the room. Went to the store, and it was only $25 back then. And I couldn't afford it. I didn't have enough money. So back at home, I found a bare spot on the wall in the living room, and I nailed some Christmas lights on the wall, and I did it in the shape of a Christmas tree. You know, the base of the tree touched the floor, so it kind of looked like it was standing on the floor in a way. I stood back and looked at it, and I thought I was the worst father ever. I mean, I couldn't even afford a real tree for my daughter. I brought my daughter home from school, and we walked into the living room, and she looked up on the wall and saw her new electric tree, and then she just ran out the front door, and I was left standing there going, what the heck was that? What, does she like it? Did I fail? And then she comes running back in with two of her friends, and she goes, hey, look at my Christmas tree. And her friends go, wow. I was so scared. I was so embarrassed, really, of what I had done. But my daughter loved it. She didn't care if it was real or not.
Hi, I'm Jeanette Elliott.
My name is Elliot O'Ryan.
Yeah? Can I make a request?
To this day, neither of us knows why or remembers why, but he just got it in his head that he wanted to play violin. I held off. I kept saying, well, let's wait, because he seemed so young to start on an instrument, especially when it's so difficult. I knew that about the violin. But he wouldn't let it go, and he kind of pestered me regularly, and I finally said, okay. And not long after, not too long, maybe 6 months, he had his first recital. And I remember he got on stage and his teacher and I looked at each other with this, well, we tried kind of look, because she wasn't convinced he was going to do well. And she was very good with him, very patient. Her patience was amazing. And then he started to play. And we were just, when he was done, we were like, who was that? No matter how mediocre he seemed at home, he'd get on the stage and just blow us away. So she entered him every year into a competition. And every single year, he got the highest score that you could get. And then he continued to play, you know, all through high school. And then right before I moved out here, his life changed. You were 19, right, honey?
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to talk about that day?
I was with my girlfriend. We were moving into our own place out of my best friend's place. And the big glass table had a small crack in it. And I was carrying it down the stairs, and it snapped. And it severed three of my tendons in my arm. And my ex-girlfriend called my mom, panicking, telling them to meet me at the hospital. And they did surgery. They reattached my tendons, and I had a cast all the way up past my elbow for like almost a year. And they also said, you may or may not be able to play violin or guitar or any of the other instruments that you play ever again. Just letting you know, it might not be possible for you to use those fingers. It was a moment of just panic, like this sinking feeling of like your throat dropping into your stomach, dropping into your gut. That was probably the scariest thing that I could imagine, was not being able to do what I loved more than anything in the world. And they just handed me a big prescription for oxycodone and said, gave me like 7 months of refills on it. I got addicted to them, plain and simple.
Elliot did call me at one point and say, he was very open. He said, Mom, I'm addicted to these pills and I can't get off of them. And I said, okay, you know, I'm a mom. Action is needed. And I called his father and we're good friends. And I said, look, Elliot's addicted to this, the pain pills he was put on. And he's really, really freaking out. And can we get him into, can you get him to a rehab in Ohio? Because I was out here with the other two kids. And he got him in right away.
It was a very small 10-bedroom facility, literally in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky. It was just detox-based. I was only in that facility for 6 days. It should have been so much longer. And so it just wasn't enough. And I was right back to using as soon as I got out of there, basically.
So it was almost a year. I came out here in August. One of our neighbors called me and said, I'm really worried about Elliot. There's something really wrong. As much as he denied it when I would ask him. So flew him out here. And I have to say, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when you got off that plane, it was all I could do to hold back the tears. I had never seen someone so sick.
I actually did cry when the plane landed. It was really powerful to have a chance. But it didn't last. It didn't last. I came out here, you know, got my violin back, doing violin stuff, you know, and I had a bunch of minor relapses where I'd like go back into it for like a couple days or a week and then I'd get back out of it. It was around that time when things got really bad. I was attacked. I was mugged late at night in North Hollywood, and a guy beat me almost to death with a hammer, and he had chiseled one end into a blunt axe. My lungs were punctured and bleeding. Most of my ribs were shattered. And I woke up 3 days later in a trauma unit with a morphine drip. And that's like a death sentence to people with, you know, an addiction. And I think I said to my mom, like I was crying and I was like, she didn't even know where I was for 3 days, you know. I was like, I don't want this disease. I was like, just sobbing, like, I don't want this. Because I knew it was going to happen. It sent me into the darkest place, the kind of derelict homelessness and addiction that I would not wish on my worst enemy. It's a hard place to be. And I started renting a violin, and that was the only thing I think that kept me from dying. And I would busk, you know, just that random homeless person that you see playing an instrument out on the street. I was one of them. And it kept some clothes on me and ability to wash them and kept up my drug habit. But it also gave me that tiniest bit of hope in, like, the darkest place was the fact that I was starting to be able to move my hand and play the violin again.
The next, I don't know how many couple of years were the most terrifying I've ever had in my life. Elliot has two siblings and a father and cousins and people who love him, but we were watching him die. It changed who he was. It changed how he looked, how he spoke, how he acted, how he thought, how he felt. It was like, these drugs were bleeding him of, like, his soul. And it's terrifying for a parent because there were times I thought I would bury this child of mine. I would run into him up, you know, on Victory once in a while and we'd talk.
The night before Christmas, my mom's friend got me a room, a nice room, a nice Airbnb room for Christmas so that I wouldn't be out on the streets, you know, that I have a nice place to just sleep and have some privacy and not wash myself in a, you know, Panda Express bathroom. And me and my mom were in the car and I was about to go there. And then my mom got a call from this place that I went to, this rehab Tarzana treatments. And they're like, oh, they have a bed. And my mom was like, all right, we have to go. And I was like, no, please, I'm not ready. I just need, just give me this one night in this Airbnb to take a shower and have privacy. Because I know when I go in there, I'm not going to have any of that. you know, I'm going to go through hell. Just give me this vestige of peace before I go. My mom was scared, rightfully so. And we had a big fight about it. And my mom said, you're not going to go.
And I really regretted, as soon as I said it, saying, you're never going to go. That was the desperate words of a parent that shouldn't have come out of my mouth, but they did. And he was so upset by that. So we parted ways. He spent the night there. And yeah, I went to pick him up in the morning because I said, I'll pick you up. But he was gone.
I didn't have a phone. I had already left.
And I was devastated. They said the bed was only going to be there Christmas Eve. And now it was Christmas Day. And I thought, that's it. We missed it. On my way back home, I just had another one of those strange mom feelings. And I drove over to the Target near me. And there's my son in the parking lot. And I pulled up. And I couldn't remember the last time you had such a big smile on your face. He looked so happy. And I rolled down the window. He said, I'm ready, Mom. Let's go. I'm ready to go. And he jumped in the car, and I was just praying, oh, my God, do they even have a bed? And we called, and they're like, yeah, that bed is open. The person who was supposed to come didn't come, so, yeah, come on over.
And then they asked me, when I finished detox, do you want to stay for the residential program? And I don't know what it was. The words that were supposed to come out of my mouth were, no, I'm okay. And the words that came out of my mouth were, sure, why not? And I think it's because for the first time I saw the universe, spirit of Christmas, whatever you want to call it, conspire in my favor to give me another shot. And I got my violin back and started practicing again. And I got did a bunch of workouts with my hands so that I could use those tendons. And I started playing guitar and violin again. And now violin work covers most of my expenses in my life, you know, and I'm not homeless anymore. You know, and it's hard. You know, I still struggle like everyone else does. But I committed to the second chance that I got. And it's 3 years now. It'll be 3 years the day after Christmas that I will have been sober.
That's Elliot Orion playing the violin just last week in North Hollywood. All of these stories produced by KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo, with original score and sound design by our audio engineer, John Meek. Thank you if you reached out to share your holiday memories. And happy holidays to you. Straight ahead on Greater LA, the year in review in Orange County, Gustavo Arellano looks back and marvels at all the news out of OC. That's yours after this short break.